Welcome to the Strength Connection Podcast, a show to share stories, insights, and experiences from some of the greatest coaches in the world. I'm Michael Kurkowski, so grateful for you joining me today. And if you like this episode, please like, share, and subscribe to support the show. All right, let's dive in. Here we go.
All right, and we're live. Andrew Coates, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me, man.
Hey, Michael. Thank you. Appreciate seeing you again.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Everybody tuning in, appreciate you guys taking the time.
Absolutely. Yes, I was looking back and you came on, it was episode 33, which was a couple years ago, and now we're in the 230s, so it's definitely been a minute there, but first off to kick this off and start, first, thank you for joining, but also really the content that you put out on social media. I think there's so much information overload. And as I mentioned in a message to you, I've seen the influence that you've built up over time and really like doing it in the right way, just with good content. And you know, I see like three people that I follow and I've been fortunate to have talk you, Luca Husover, and Jonathan Goodman, who I know you guys very well of doing it the right way. So I appreciate people who are putting their effort in. I know you do that, you know, for a reason, but I just really have enjoyed following you, man.
There's a few things here that's actually worth going into. Number one, I was with Luca this weekend. We both spoke together at Coaching Out. We're on a panel together. Luca's a good friend. And I'll give you some insider info. So he'll be speaking at my event September 13th and 14th at Edmonton again. He spoke last year, but I will be a speaker at his event October 10th through 12th. He's rebooting the Vigor Ground Fitness and Business Conference. That thing's going to be a banger.
Yeah.
So guys, keep these two events on your radar, but like prioritize Lucas. Like mine will crush. Lucas will do great. But the lineup, which I won't say the rest of the lineup yet. He hasn't revealed it, but he's got open registration soon and reveal. It's insane. It's going to be good. Jonathan's a great friend too. He'll be speaking at my event again as well. It kind of cool how like you had me on a couple of years ago, and obviously my media had not grown quite where it is right now a couple years ago. So I appreciate anybody who kind of found me and gave me an earlier podcast, you know, opportunity as the sort of thing was growing. So that's meaningful. That's really cool. I don't know any other way to approach this stuff. I can't take shortcuts. I can't do the trickery. I can't, you know, you get people doing dumb shit like buying followers or paying for shout outs or all this kind of nonsense. Like I was just on another podcast and I talked a little bit about this. There are a lot of people in the industry who are really hungry for status and they're in a rush for status, and you can't rush the process. I mean, it's weird that a fitness coach who is trying to tell their clients, hey, you know, you can't rush this process. You gained the 50 pounds over the course of the last 5 years. You're not going to lose it in 5 months.
Right.
So, but yet there are trainers who are trying to hack the system and they want to go to global industry superstars with, you know, massive followings and massive authority. And anybody that you like, you just listed Luca and John and anybody else who's kind of in that space. These are people who've head down working in their, you know, coaching business for a really long time. And they invested in being in rooms. They connected with people. Both of them are phenomenal for this particular thing. And you can create high leverage relationships and opportunities, but they built content. They shared a ton of free stuff. They both have podcasts. And the public speaking and the visibility there, the byproduct of having done all this other shit, a lot of writing, just a lot of showing up to support other people. And honestly, like, you can move things along quicker if you really immerse yourself in those behaviors, if you really commit to long-form content creation in a way that's valuable to people and learn the craft so that way you're getting it in front of more people. People are getting a lot of value out of it. Awesome. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be application across time. Like we're talking about, you know, people might say there's luck involved. Yeah, there's always luck involved in these things, but it's a concept that I got onto called surface area of luck. And I like this framework. It's, you're going to be lucky based on the opportunities that you create by putting yourself in rooms with other people, people on the same journey as you or the industry leaders. And it's not just about currying the favor of the industry leaders. The people who are probably going to be the most valuable relationships are the people who are on the same journey you are, and you support them. And because you never know what's going to happen. It's not about investing in penny stocks and hoping some of them pay off long-term. That's too transactional, but it's support people because you enjoy it and you're fulfilled by seeing other people doing really well. And, you know, high tides raise all ships,
right?
That kind of mentality, right? Be abundant in your mindset. give, be supportive, and without being transactional or having any specific expectation in return. Mm-hmm. Be of service to the client in front of you. And if you're patient, you apply this over a long time frame and a lot of touch points, which is the definition of the surface area of luck, then you will benefit from it because you've learned skills, you put yourself in situations where you can, when opportunities arise, either A, you have the skills and you're ready to take advantage of those opportunities, or you're close enough where you can say yes to that, and then you go figure it out. And I've been in that situation a lot, right? When I was first invited to write for T Nation, which is one of the highest leverage points in my career, that was over 5 years ago. I was already writing for my website and I had been reading books about writing. So I put myself in a position where I could say yes to that, but I also continued to study writing and I worked really hard at it. It went well. When I was given my first public speaking opportunity, which was not that long ago, we're talking about summer of 2021. It's a friend of mine on the same journey as me. I met at an event in 2017, kept in touch over the years. Actually, I attended his event a couple of times. It's my friend Tim Arndt, an event called the Inland Empire Fitness Conference in Spokane. It's now defunct, but he had it for at least four years. I think it was five. So I attended a couple of years and COVID all happened, wiped shit out. And then 2021, he needed a speaker and he asked me. I hadn't done anything, any meaningful public speaking. So what I do, I texted Luca and I said, yo, what books you got on public speaking, right? So I just devoured that stuff. And then my then girlfriend was really good with PowerPoint type stuff. So she helped me build something, put it together. I practiced, you know, really, really worked on the craft of it. It went well. And I kept getting invitations and I kept working on the skill set of it. And I just want to make sure that's an incredible experience. And then I leverage my network, my connections to try to put butts in seats. So event organizers know it's like, okay, you mobilize bodies. We want you to speak because I have a limited budget and limited speaking slots. And if you want, if you're putting on an event, in order to make sure you don't lose a ton of money, and it's a really good thing, you have to put butts in seats, right? So right. You have to also understand what's in it for the other person, which I always try to look at it that way too.
Mm-hmm. I love that. It's interesting what you said about the status chasing. You know, I think that's something that's so prevalent and it always brings me back. I've said this quote ad nauseum, I think on this podcast, but Aubrey Marcus said the difference between being a person and being a persona. And it's like, and he said, a persona is only worthy of praise. A person is worthy of love. And I think it's very easy. Like if you are like, you chase that status and you want to be that person that people see as it, but you're really vying into that lane of being a persona. Like you want the praise, you want the accolades, but it's so short-lived and it's so hard to keep that going versus doing it in the sense like you have, or like you mentioned, Luca or John, I see a person in that content in there because of the work that they've done. So it comes off even so much more authentic.
Let's make this a little bit more visceral to the everyday person. You know, if you have someone who is lying all the time about shit, it takes a lot more effort to keep your lies straight, right? To remember who you've told what to, what kind of fabrication. But if you are always honest, always authentic, always truthful, which I think is most people's default setting, then, you know, the truth is easy to remember because it's the truth. It's the past. It is who you are, right? Rights, wrongs, good, bad, etc. And so therefore, there's not a lot of extra mental bandwidth in trying to remember and keep all that shit straight because it's just fundamentally been what your experience is. And so if you are fundamentally yourself coming from an authentic place, being yourself, I mean, there are people in the industry who I think have a performative, that's not necessarily the right word. They can put on a performance with a bit of an aggrandized version of themselves. And they can be a bit of a character or a little bit of an right. overblown persona, but it's still fundamentally who they are. Lane Norton is a great example of this. Lane, I've met, hung out with in person. Lane's a great guy. You know, he is who he is. There's no doubt about it, right? Like he's real on social media, but then Lane amplifies right. his persona on social media to great effect, right? But it's also a playground where he can, who knows, maybe that's his real self. Maybe it's right. because, you know, he enjoys the stage and the limelight to where his most authentic and ebullient and bombastic nature comes forth. So maybe that's the reality. And maybe just the rest of the time, he's got to be a bit more of a subdued version of himself. Right. I'm fine with that. But fundamentally, if you're trying to be what you're alluding to is a completely different fucking person online versus who you are every day. And your presence online is inauthentic and manufactured and fake. That's going to be exhausting. So it's going to be much harder to keep it straight and keep it up and perform in that fashion. right? And I have friends who will put on, like, I got a whole bunch of buddies who will put on wigs, and they have this caricature that they will play sometimes on their social media. But like, that's a outlet of fun and self-expression too. So that's right. Not what we're talking about, right? You get my buddy, Brad Jensen. He also spoke at this event, the sober bodybuilder, and he'll pop on a wig, right? Jordan Syatt will wear a wig.
James Coppola does his Tammy.
James totally thought of James Coppola, right? Like, it does his Tammy thing. And it's actually quite funny, right? So, and I think that they have a lot of fun with it. So it lets them be playful. And I think there's a big difference between being playful and authentic versus being forced and fake. And the forced and fake has got to be exhausting.
Right.
If you look at people like Luca is a great example of this. You know, if you look at like just sheer magnitude of work ethic and what the hardworking people got their hands in, probably too many things.
Yeah.
The outsized impact they're having. Guess what? The only way you can keep up that pace and not absolutely burn your system out is to come from a place of true authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, Lane Norton's a really interesting example you gave there, because he does like his What the Fitness work, where he kind of calls out bullshit in the industry, and he does it very grandiose and kind of bombastic. But then you do hear him in podcasts and stuff, and he's much more of subdued. And when you said, like, I think the entertainment aspect of social media, yeah, like that's a piece of it, but that doesn't come off as inauthentic. Like, it is something very different. And Luca's a really interesting example. Luca's like, the amount of energy that guy has, you know, of speaking to him is just insane. And I think it's very easy for, that's why when you look at people who are in a success mode and you look at people you want to aspire to be, it's very easy to want to emulate that type of work. But if it's not your personality, if that's not who you are, it's eventually going to, you know, catch up with you. You can only hold on to, maybe you can do it for 6 months or a year, or maybe a couple years even, but eventually it's going to, you know, it's going to go back, because it's not really who you are. And eventually you're going to find yourself in that hole trying to dig yourself out.
I agree.
Yeah. So going back, so I know you mentioned in January of 2020 was when your energy and your mindset shifted a lot more to the work that you were doing on social media, writing daily and posting daily from there. We want to ask you about kind of that time frame. Like, what was it about then that changed in your view or your mindset of where you wanted to go, which brought you down into like this daily work of putting a lot of effort into your influence on social?
So I often cite the beginning of 2020, but this would actually be late 2019. So I think it's, you reach a tipping point, critical mass of absorbing ideas and knowledge. If you're listening and studying and always like absorbing stuff, but you're not actually applying it, it's just productive procrastination. It emotionally soothes you, but you're actually not doing anything. And I think a lot of coaches get caught up in this shit all the time, right? Just, oh, I'll do another course. And what do? You do courses and shit you're already good at instead of this, the hard stuff that you're not so good at that you actually need, right? Like the business, the sales, the media side of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think one of the major inflection points was I had Jordan Syatt on a podcast in 2019. Jordan is a friend. We've spoken at a few events since I first met him. It was late 2022 when we first met in person. But Jordan, his media, I've listened to his podcasts a lot over the years, soaked up a lot of his stuff, his ethos, and he's very big on long form content. So that's had a big influence on me. But I also saw, like, one of my favorite things is I like seeing through the matrix, I like to call it, on patterns. It's pattern recognition about the way that people do things on social media. And so if anybody remembers back in 2017, infographics were kind of the big trend. Now that became very ubiquitous, very fast, and a lot of copycatting to the point where it was hard to set yourself apart. But at the time, there were four accounts mainly. There was a few others that really kind of blew up on it. Sohee Lee, Spencer Nadolski, Jordan Syatt, Carter Good. And Carter Good was really just a mentee of Jordan's in this. And so Carter, I know Carter personally, great guy, but I would single out Sohee, Spencer, and Jordan as being these outsized, successful people in the industry, big brands. They've done a lot more outside of social media. So they've all got books now. Jordan wrote his a little bit later, but they all have written books. They're all well-known public speakers. They've all built fairly successful businesses. So they have quite a bit of authority, credibility in the industry. And they were also very savvy about social media, and they leaned on they were early adopters and popularizers of this big trend. Now, they don't still make infographics. That that wave wrote its course, right? You still see that stuff sometimes, but it doesn't have the ability to
Right.
scale brand and followers the way it used to. So they all, along with some other people, started sharing Twitter posts, like the image of a Twitter post with their name, their little picture on it, and then whatever caption they wrote. And they're sharing that to Instagram. And so those were doing pretty well, but there still weren't a lot of people doing it. So I started doing that in late 2019. So I wasn't the first one on it, but I was one of the earlier people. And so there was a bit more space. So I kept doing it. I also, now I'm already writing for T Nation. I've been doing that for what, 5 years. So that would be, yeah. So I was already there earlier in 2019. February 2019 was when I first got published. And the logic was, well, if I'm writing for T Nation, I've had this podcast for a while, I need to have a more consistent and visible presence on social media. And I remember starting out, and I was around 3,000 followers at the time. And my goal was, hey, I want to hit this 10,000 mark. I figure I can get there in 2 years based on the early pace, slow growing. Because everybody wanted to swipe up back then. We forget about swipe up, but swipe up was really useful to be able to like direct people to your links, you'll get people your podcasts, your articles, or whatever. So that was kind of the target. And as I kept posting and sharing, get better response, learning from it, crafting, you know, the way to write the messages, very meticulous in editing. It was a brilliant aspect of Twitter that made this work. It's a character limit. So it forced you to choose every word, every aspect of the way you created your message very carefully. So that way it had maximum punch and not really fluffy or wordy. And so that practice plus that came from the study of writing, a lot of books on writing. They're literally over my shoulders, probably about like 14 of them up there, meant that I was getting better at this stuff quickly. So my stuff was starting to reach more people. And then because of relationships I had in the industry, knowing Dr. Mike Isertel, Mike just kept taking my posts in your full image, my name, tag my account right at the top of the caption, and it was sharing it on his wall. And so this would drive hundreds of followers my way. So I did hit that 10,000 mark by year one of this. And Mike probably is responsible for half of it. Jordan Syatt shared a post of mine in his story, tagged me in May of, I remember this vividly, May of 2020. At the time, I had 3,900 followers. And in 24 hours, I had 4,300. So 400. I gained 10% of my following. And I actually tracked this stuff. And like, people might laugh, but it's like, I set out to accomplish something with this. So I was tracking my progress on this, right? And you know, it's not about a vanity metric. It's like, okay, cool, I'm getting in front of more people, and you know, you're learning from the process of crafting your messaging so that way more people are consuming your media, which means more people may be consuming your coaching, right? It's not about, ooh, I need like this number of followers just to look important. Like, if that's your logic's broken. You want to think about just how much impact you could scale across a larger number of people and the right people, right? Which is why buying followers doesn't fucking work. So you know, I end up hitting this mark. And then, you know, by the end of year two, I'm up to 35,000 followers because it kept growing, you know, faster and faster. And then end of year three, it was 95,000. And the end of year four, it was just like one, I think it was 149. And now I'm over 160. So, and I just had this issue with like losing my account for a bit because me and a whole bunch of accounts were all like the targets of this like extortion attack. It sounds crazy. It's all good. Got it back. Fixed that problem. Did not pay off the extortionist. Fuck that ship. But and I think now I made some arrangements. I think my account is safe from any future issues like this. But I'm saying to people, hey, get on my email list because that's something people should be growing, right? Hey, I've got a really good example of why you need to do this. And I know I'm side questing here a little bit, but if you go back to it, it's also very easy to reverse engineer and apply narratives. Humans are post-rationalization like machines. We are great at this stuff. So we don't always remember what was really going on inside our minds. And the narrative can change based on the outcome down the road, especially years later. But I do believe genuinely that my rationale was, hey, I need to have an engaged and growing social media presence to complement the fact that I was writing for a fairly major publication. And I think, you know, at getting in with T Nation, you would think, okay, writing for T Nation, that's just going to drive followers your way. It actually didn't. Although the fact that I use T Nation as part of my brand, when people were seeing my social media posts, that helped. You know, people looked at this and oh, that's a good reason to follow this guy. This guy's a writer for T Nation. And then, you know, I kept getting invitations on a lot of podcasts. So lots and lots of podcasts. And even though each individual one, for the most part, might have, you know, had a small effect, it adds up over time. The people who are finding you, listening to you through podcasts, are going, okay, cool, I like what this guy has to say. I'm going to go follow him on his social media. And all these things magnified every bloody day, posting, showing up, responding to comments, responding to messages. Like, this one drives me nuts. If a coach, if you want clients and if you want to do good, you want to help people, you say shit like, oh, I don't care about the money, I just want to help people. All right, cool. Earning a good livelihood keeps you in the game so that you can help a lot of people.
And allows you to help a lot more people.
If you figure out ways to scale it, and you can do more. Yeah. And of course, with social media, you can help more people. With a larger social media following, and then you create long-form content, you can share the podcast appearance. You can share your articles. You can share your free resources, your lead magnet, et cetera, with more people. You can help them. If you want to give people shit for free. And some of those people are going to opt in and go, how can I pay you? And then you're right. Going to earn a livelihood and feed your family, right? That's actually like all awesome. There's nothing dishonorable about that. So let me bring myself back to where I was. I think I've lost my train of thought there a little bit. So
let me ask you something from that. So like with that of now putting in content and committed to daily work, and you're seeing, you know, the engagement go up and then, you know, hitting these numbers, was there a specific process of like, this is the message that I want to consistently bring out? Like, what was your daily process of putting out information? Did you have a certain like funnel process, or was it more kind of, this is what I'm thinking of for the day? Or
cool. Probably the latter. I want to come back to that. I did remember what I was going to say.
Gotcha.
If coaches cannot, in a prompt fashion, respond to messages from people who like want to ask you questions or sharing your stuff and tagging you, want to interact with you, you're an idiot. Okay. I do not understand coaches who like have anxiety about or just do not want to respond to people. Like, they want some more status. They want the status of a large following, but they actually don't want to do the human interaction right. thing. It's the best fucking part. It's the highest leverage thing. If someone's in my DMs and they're asking me a question, I'm like, I'm going to hit them up with a voice message, say their name. Like, that is amazing. Okay. And that just, people go, wow, they can't even believe it. And you magnify that over time. Sure. Across a large following, it feels like a very time intensive, low leverage task, but on an individual interaction, it's incredibly powerful and high leverage task. Right. And you do enough of it, some of those people are going to self-select to want to train with you. My online coaching business is always good, just because there's just enough people always asking about it. So back to what you were saying, there are people who think in terms of content calendars. There are people who think in terms of like, okay, I'm going to sit down and like do this, you know, these few hours for content creation. That stuff can work fine. Me, I have a different process. As I am coaching clients in person, as I'm thinking, as I'm in the shower, whatever, something pops to mind. And then I immediately go, okay, cool. I put in my notes thing in my phone or my tablet when I'm training clients. And I'll say to them, hey, you just gave me a really great idea. Let me write this down. I'll turn this into a social media post or write an article about it. Like, a lot of my training articles are stuff that comes from the real practical experience of training people or some of my own workouts. So if you're always aware to capture the ideas as they occur and note them, because you'll forget, you will fucking forget, then put them in, you know, a notebook, your notes thing, whatever. And then when you have more time, come back to them and play around. Then you can go on your Twitter and, you know, play around with the idea, write it up, see what pops. And then Seth Godin's idea, you know, that you want to do good work, but you got to ship the work, right? You just got to keep shipping, shipping. Not get emotionally attached to any specific outcome from any one particular effort, but learn from the process so that way over time you're getting better and better at this stuff, right? So you're learning from the various metrics depending on what we're talking about. And I just did a lot of that. So I said, okay, I'm going to have a post every single day. And if I wake up in the morning, I don't have a post. Well, I got one of two things. One is I got to brainstorm a little bit and like rack my brain for something, and I'll write something. And sometimes these things fizzle and it's like, okay, cool, I don't have to respond to too much today. Or sometimes they just, something really super simple goes off, like goes absolutely bananas on social media. Awesome. Respond to everything that people throwing at you. It can drive new following your way. I can't do this anymore at scale, but early on in the process, I would actually like try to message some of the new followers and send them a right. voice message. Say, hey, listen, thank you. Say their name. Thank you so much for following. I really appreciate it. Reach out anytime. That blows people away. They can't even believe you do shit like that, right? So again, low leverage at scale, but really high leverage individually, which is massive if you somehow were able to scale it. And it's scaling the unscalable. I like that phrase because you can't do it for everybody, but if people see that you're doing this kind of stuff, then it gets a lot of buzz and you stand out. Your reputation for these kind of things, word spreads that you do this sort of stuff. And, you know, people in the industry know that I send a lot of voice messages, and my industry peers like joke about it as if it's like, almost annoying. There's an etiquette about it too, right? But you know, if someone's busy and you know, I'm not sending them 4 minute long voice messages, but you know, you got to read the room with those sort of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. The content creation process, it's just making sure that you're alert to the conversations, the experiences going on around you as they're happening. If a client is asking you a question and that question has come up before, guess what? There's content there, whether it's a social media post or one of my favorite ways to get people to start writing, they're struggling to write for their own website, is write up a frequently asked questions section. Make note of every time a question, a topic comes up. Good. You go in, you write that up, you explain it. And then the next time a client asks that, you go, hey, I've actually got that on my website. I'm going to get you, I'm going to send this to you. I'm going to send the link, but also let's talk about your individualized, nuanced answer to this. And they're going to be impressed the fact that you have all this stuff done up on your website. And obviously one by one, even if the effort seems like time consuming, if you're answering these questions and writing them up over time, well, you're going to have to re-answer them in real time anyway. And if you're in person, okay, cool. That's you riffing and like talking like the way we are. But for your online clients, you're going to have to type this shit out. Makes more sense to actually have it already prepared once, send it to them, and then again, address it with a bit of individualized nuance to that client. It's going to impress them more. It's also a resource library that other people could find who might decide, wow, this is really good. I want to go coach with him or her, right? Right.
I love that. I can attest to the voice message. And I love that you do that, because that's actually when we first connected a while ago. So I think I reposted something from What Have You Did. And all of a sudden I saw this voice message. I was like, I was blown away just by that. And you said like, it's just that individual touch from that. And I started doing that right afterwards. I was like, this is, because it actually, you think of it as like a time consuming thing. It's actually for a 3 or 4 second, just quick voice note is actually easier than typing out. It's like the same exact time frame.
I'm going to illustrate this. Let's see if I've got any one of them. I was looking for something. Don't see. Oh, my friend Susan Niebergala. Susan is actually a really badass, well-known coach. Let's see. Hey, Susan, it's nice to hear from you. So I'm actually on a podcast I'm recording, and you're my example of sending a voice message to see how quickly this is. Thank you for looking that up for me. I appreciate you, and I hope you're feeling great. So, boom. How long did that take, right?
Eight seconds.
Time at all. If I'm training 6 clients in a row and I don't have much of a break in between, you know, I hit up the washer, whatever. I can, as I'm walking out from it and walk up my next client, I can probably pop that open and bang off 1 to 2 quick voice messages that are individualized and thoughtful. I would rather send something quick and thoughtful than make someone listen to a 45-second rambling, poorly thought out message. Now, sometimes someone has asked me something that requires that depth of nuance, and I will do it.
Right.
Right. But you guys just saw there how quick and easy that was.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love what you said about that surface area of luck and the success right there. And as you said, like, you know, talked about like the last few years when social media has really blown up for you. But before that, you were already writing for a long time. You're already coaching for many years before then. And then also you have your own podcast that you do, which has 300 plus episodes on there, plus also speak. So you're doing you're wearing a lot of different hats. So going on that, I did want to ask you about your personal process of balancing. I hate that word balance because I really hate that word balance because I think it's so, it's a myth in many different ways. But I am always curious about how people who juggle many different hats and try and put themselves in a lot of different arenas get everything down. Do you have a specific process that you do of getting everything done that you have?
So I'm laughing because I just recorded another podcast and this question came up. So I'll actually
do the same. I know it's so trite, but I have to ask it.
No, but because the likelihood of like the same people being listening to this twice, two different podcasts is quite low. But then if someone is like, it's really going to drive the message home. So I laugh at the whole concept of balance because there is no such thing as balance in our career. There really isn't fundamentally. So I like to say this. It's like, why would I do somebody else's, like more of somebody else's arbitrary idea of what balance is that I enjoy less, which takes me away from what I enjoy doing, which is the work. Like I enjoy that more. So why would I do less of what I enjoy, more of what I don't enjoy because of someone else's concept of what my life is supposed to be like? That's insane. That's nuts to me. Now, obviously I think you need to get really clear on what moves the needle forward for you, what you're fulfilled by, what is good high leverage use of your time. I think if you're really smart about you know, the way you build your systems around you, it can free you up to do more of those high leverage tasks, which are more fulfilling, earn a great livelihood. And then you can carve out and create balance in the strictest sense of the word. I think there are a lot of people who are very successful in the industry who like to talk about boundaries, but I think that those are the same people who worked mad hours, really grinded hard over many years and created a big time surface area of luck to where they achieved outsized levels of success, which necessitated them to be very picky about the things that they were saying yes to. Very important skill, by the way, as you go. And then establishing what their boundaries were, because I think you need those kind of boundaries after a while to be effective mm-hmm. at moving what matters to you forward and serving your business and your brand. But most people don't start out there. So clarity on, like, the book, The One Thing, I think is really good for this. The book Essentialism by Greg McKeown, mm-hmm. really good at, okay, get clear on what matters to you. Because a lot of people are going to start coming at you more and more with requests of your time that don't serve you, that benefit them. And, you know, I'm more and more, I say no to a lot of stuff now, right? I have to, but it keeps me able to, within my schedule, to say yes to, you know, more writing opportunities, or if a speaking thing comes up that appeals to me, or, you know, good podcast interviews. I think podcast interviews are just, they're fun. I enjoy them. So they're, to me, they're high leverage or valuable. Or if a client, you know, messaged me and says, hey, you know, I want to come back and train with you, right? Or new clients refer to me. I have the ability to take those people in my schedule because, yes, I know what I'm not going to fill my schedule up full of. But lately, I've been in a really hard, like a season of like head down in work. Yeah. So I've had some weekends where it's like up late on weekend nights working away. I was building, I did a launch on an online group training cohort. And my partner in the project for the last 2 years, she decided she wanted to go and do her own thing. She's great. We have a great relationship. And she, you know, I offered to pay her some money out for, you know, what she had done for it. And she's instrumental to getting it off the ground. I couldn't have done it without her. And she, the back end, the system, brilliant with this stuff. And so I had to learn all this stuff, take it over myself. She walked me through it. And then I had a lot of like manual punching in stuff, linking mm-hmm. videos, switching the stuff over to my platforms. And so the weekend before the launch was a lot of like manual, tedious stuff. Cool. Probably what most of that stuff was one time only stuff, was worth it, really fulfilling when it was done. And then the launch absolutely crushed. It was way better than I could have even asked for, because leading up to it, I was actually considering, oh, maybe I just don't want to do this anymore. Like, I'm just overwhelmed with the idea of doing this. But then, you know, and I revealed that to the community, the Facebook group, the women in the program, and their responses were just crazy. Like, I already decided I was staying in it, and I realized how valuable this infrastructure was. And I was kind of new. But then when I saw, read some of those responses, I'm like, oh my God, I was nearly in tears reading like just how one of my members, she had said how, you know, she'd paid a lot of money to a coach for one-on-one stuff and he wasn't responsive and she didn't really get a great experience. It'd take her like three to five days, just get back to her on anything. And here I am, like, I've got this like reasonable price point. It's a group training platform. So it's not like hyper individualized, mm-hmm. but there's built in the ways for them to individualize it for themselves. And then I'm in the Facebook group and I respond to everything, any individualized questions they have, I'm responding. And so, you know, she's talking about how like on social media, I'm always like responding in voice messages, even before she signed up, and, you know, I'm responsive there. So if you're like that, you know, your client, the people realize, well, if he's like that just with social media, what's he like as a coach, right? Right. So it sends a message anyway. So she was just gushing about like how wonderful this thing was. And, you know, it was so much less expensive than this program that obviously didn't serve her. So I'm reading that stuff and I'm like, oh my God, right? So I realize what I've got here is super crazy valuable, but okay, it means work. And hopefully I can build it to the point where I can, you know, cut down on the number of hours I coach full, you know, in person. I'm still full time, but I really sure. love it. I don't like saying no to clients who are reaching out going, hey, I want to come train with you. Mm-hmm. So, but it also means that supply and demand, you can increase your rates a little bit and earn more of a livelihood, right. which is a nice problem to have. I know I'm wandering really far afield and caffeine in my brain in that combination tends to do this, but I do have a sort of a sense of what my time can handle. And then I remember listening to Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. We were speaking at an event and she talked about how she thinks about things, and she thinks about things as one project at a time. She gets very clear on working on that project. And that sort of seeped into my brain. And if I'm working on a major project, like I've submitted, I'm writing a fairly big piece for a new publication. I never reveal new publications until it is literally
Right.
published, because I have had things on the goal line, and then like bodybuilding.com, I could tell this story. I was paid, I was commissioned, I was paid, the editor was great. Just before my article would have been published, I had a contributor page. Now there's something going on with all the articles on bodybuilders. They broke something internally. So everything's down now. But for a very long time, I had a contributor page, my picture, name on bodybuilding.com. No article linked to it, because at the 11th hour, they were sold. The editor was not able to get it published. He moved on. He's with another organization. We still talk to this day. And he regrets not publishing it. So I cannot officially claim that I've written for bodybuilding.com. So it's like, shit, I missed out on a really, really big thing. And I've got lots of other ones. So I got something new coming up. Pretty solid deal, to say the least. But once that thing is literally in digital print, then I will splash it on my social media. But when that opportunity came up, I'm like, I'm going to carve out the time for this. So made sure I got it done. If you're clear on time boundaries around like major projects, you'll get a good sense of what you can handle. And most people don't need to try to juggle all these things. I think most people should actually do a much better job than I do about getting clear on not trying to do it all. Like having a podcast, writing long form content, coaching full time in person, online group, online one on one, all this public speaking, you name it, all these things. Most people shouldn't be trying to do all this stuff. Okay. You're never going to gain any traction with any of them. It just so happens that I've been able to balance it. So I'm not a good role model in that sense.
But I think it's a really good point of like figuring out where your boundaries are. We talk a lot about balance and about like setting those boundaries, but without experience, it's really hard to know those things. I remember when my friend Rebecca Rouse was on the podcast, and she's built up her following, and she talked about like she just put in a season of yes, where she's like, all right, for this time frame, I'm just saying yes to everything, because she wanted to know how much she could stretch her bandwidth to do it. And there's some merit to doing that. And I think, I mean, even on the health and fitness field of people starting their journey right away, if you're talking about how to balance everything, it's like, well, if you've never actually incorporated this into your life, this is going to feel very extreme. And you can probably do a lot more than you're giving yourself credit for. So I think there is a merit, and there's a lesson to pushing the boundaries and then revert back to them. Otherwise, often I think you're limiting yourself of what you could do. Like maybe you do a podcast, maybe you do writing, but if you don't do a bunch of different shit, you might not know really what is your avenue of where you like to put your attention, where you like to put your energy in. Then you can scale it back. So I love that you do all these different things. And because I'm sure too, like you've been writing for a long time, I'm sure the amount of energy it takes to write something now is very different than what it was before. I remember Todd Durkin told me that on the podcast, because he's got a million hats of shit that he does and stuff. He's like, yeah, but like some things are so easy for me now with just how I do it, just because I've done it for so long. Does that resonate with you? Is that kind of similar?
It for sure is the case. The more skilled you get, the less of this emotional anxiety. Alex Hormozi talks about some of this. I like some of Alex's frames. And I think Layla talks a lot about this too. If you, I can't remember how this is, but if you're anxious about like doing something and you're struggling, then you probably don't have clarity on what you're supposed to do. And I may be mixing this up a little bit, but that actually makes sense. So what I find is if I have a lot of resistance to a task and I don't necessarily have clarity on how to do it, then I just try to like zoom in on, all right, what's the next specific thing? Let's do the next thing. Let's input the next thing, even if it's a really small task. And I just take a big deep breath if I feel overwhelmed, like I don't know what I'm doing. I have this problem with a lot of the infrastructure and the back end with this online group cohort program that I had to take over myself. I'm like, all right, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. So I just sat down one piece at a time, worked my way through it. I had boundaried the time out so that way I had the whole weekend to work on it. I figured it all out. And then once you know the process, then you don't encounter anywhere near that much friction. So those are process-oriented things. Now, when it comes to creating something from nothing, which is, the scripting of a YouTube video or writing an article, then there probably still will be friction. I think for some people, my friend Lee Boyce is a very prolific writer. I think Lee finds the writing process quite effortless. My attention span struggles. I don't know if it's social media or just the way my brain works, or maybe I like caffeine too much nowadays. I didn't grow up with much caffeine. And sometimes I struggle to sit still very long. If you ever meet me at a conference. I really don't sit in the seats and zoom in on the presentations well. I'll try to do that for a couple of presentations, but usually I'm moving around back the room, interact with people out in the hallway. But that's also my favorite part of it anyway, is that sort of stuff.
Right.
Whereas the talks, like a lot of the people, if they're friends of mine or people's media, I can get that stuff one on, like just sitting in my own downtime. Whereas, you know, if I'm going to take a flight somewhere, interacting with other people and connect, getting to spend time with friends that I might get to see only a couple times a year is far more valuable to me than to sit in front of every presentation. So I still find that if I'm writing, I struggle with that kind of focus. So I have to be really interested in what I'm writing. If I'm not interested in it, it's not going to work at all. Right? You're going to be more clear on stuff that you're interested in. And then, you know, I still think it's a really good idea just to sit down and like mash ideas onto paper all in one shot as much as you can, and then separate that from the editing process where you go back and you revise very aggressively later.
Okay. So kind of do an idea, like do an idea dump and like just get everything out and then, okay.
Yep. And there, this will come up in, there's a really good book on writing if you guys are interested, On Writing Well by William Zinsser. I would probably start there. It's a classic. It's a Bible of writing. And I'm pretty sure it's that book. He talks about there's two kinds of ways people approach their writing and their editing. They're chunkers and bashers. And so the chunkers will write in pieces and then they're kind of editing as they go. And then a basher will sit down and just idea vomit all in one shot without trying to revise anything and then come back and the revision process, the editing is, you know, a separate process. And I'm a very aggressive editor. I like to spend a lot of time editing what I do, which adds friction and time to the process. But I think it reveals better writing. I think the people who just sit down and write all in one shot without much editing, there are some people who are quite talented in that and practice over time will get you better, but editing is what reveals great writing. So, and most of these books on writing will talk a lot about editing and how to, there are very specific things just to look for. I don't want to get too in the weeds on the technical stuff, but there are a handful of behaviors. I'll give you one example. If you just cut out all your adverbs and use a stronger verb instead of a weak verb plus an adverb, you get that. It'll change the quality of your writing quite dramatically.
Yeah. I love it. I'm thinking of watching Finding Forrester when Sean Connery's got the young kid and he's punch the keys. Just keep going. Just keep going. Just get all the words out over and over again. Getting into that first edition.
Great movie.
Great movie. Great phenomenal movie. Yeah. I want to ask you a bit, just kind of in closing, more about coaching. I mean, you've been a coaching for a long time, specifically working with people individually. What's the biggest evolutions that you found of how you coach now versus what you've done in the past? Like you've had a lot of inquiries, you have a lot of people that you work with. Is the process of how you work with people now much different than what you did at the early stages?
This one might sound weird, but I probably use a lower variety of different exercise tools. And this one might shock coaches because I think a lot of coaches feel the need to have, you know, having a extensive library and a lot of tools to use in different situations based on client limitations is great. You want that versatility. But I think a lot of coaches feel pressure to, well, I have to individualize my programs. It can't be cookie cutter. Like, it's like, okay. But realistically, when you get most basic people coming in for overlapping goals, they want to be strong. There are a narrower array of basic movement patterns that we're fundamentally going to get everybody to do. I recently started with a client. She's 75 and she had a knee replacement. So her strength and ability to squat deep, we're not there yet. But what do? I just had her out of box squat. That was kind of the plan going in. All right, we need to be able to restore this range of motion. I do a lot of box squatting with people. I do a lot of free squatting with people. There's a lot of variations. We can barbell, we can safety, we can goblet, you know, you name it, we can use a box. And so for her, well, we just had to start with a higher box and, you know, just make sure that felt really good. It was also her first session. So I just want to make sure she liked my coaching style and she felt great. She was good at giving me feedback. Cool. I had her push the sled, right? She really liked that. That was a good way to not have to take her through too much range of motion, but put tension in the muscles and the joint that she tolerated really well. I had her sit and do a seated cable row. She really liked that. I have a lot of people do a lot of seated cable rows, either one or two arms. And I had her do some farmer's carries, which she actually really liked. And by the end of the workout, she was pain-free. Her knee, she knew that like she had to tolerate some discomfort in her knee, but she felt really, really good. She was really happy with the process. And she actually noticed that she had greater, you know, range of motion just because she moved and loaded everything. And while this the exact workout was in a way unique from any other person. It had so much overlap with what I would do with someone with completely different goals. Let's say I'm doing a full body workout with someone. They're probably going to get some sort of squat pattern. They're probably going to be doing some, you know, rowing movement pattern. They are probably going to do some sort of carrying pattern. I didn't do a push exercise with her on this day, but it's in her second full body workout. You know, they might get a pushing pattern, which is going to be some sort of like horizontal or vertical pressing pattern. And there's an array of things there. And I had a push a sled. And so that workout theme is going to be very similar to a full body workout I'm going to do with most people who have the goal of, okay, I want to lose weight. All right, cool. We're still going to focus on getting you strong and building muscle. And we're going to get into the nutrition to get focused on the weight loss, right? I don't like circuit training people. I would rather make sure they have a foundation of strength, muscle, metabolic rate for the long run, enjoy the process and the experience of this, stay consistent, and then tune up their nutrition when we have a good relationship and they trust me and they're feeling good and there's less friction on the workout side. Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome. If I got someone who wants to put on muscle mass, sure, the way that I probably structure the workouts and the volumes may be a little bit different, but fundamentally, what are we doing? We're still trying to build muscle. We're still trying to make sure they're strong. For most people outside of very high level goals, strength building and muscle building are going to be really overlapping concepts. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to extremes and all of a sudden you have to sort of take divergent paths in order to neurologically stimulate muscular strength and you know, neurological firing for maximal strength, you know, with the same amount of muscle when it comes to shit like powerlifting, or we're probably going to take slightly different tactics if the goal is to just put on as large a muscle as possible. But guess what? The biggest bodybuilders I know are also the strongest fuckers I've ever met in my life too, right? So there's a lot of overlap there. If that person is, you know, rehabilitating from injury and just wants to move and feel better, we're fundamentally still trying to make them strong. We're going to find movements that work for them. They're still going to work within a basic array of fundamental movement patterns. And I want them to enjoy the process so they keep coming back. And then we'll talk about nutrition that supports their goals as well. They're probably going to get some cardiovascular work to build, you know, cardiovascular stamina. Again, I'm probably going to still have them push around a sled and carry weight. So a lot of these things look kind of similar, but each person's individual preferences are going to, and the way I structure a program. You get things like, all right, how do you pick a program template? Probably in a lot of cases due to how often a person works out in a week. If that person can only train once to twice a week and they're spaced out, they're getting full body workouts. They're getting a little bit of everything. If that person can string together a number of days in a row, but their number of workouts a week can vary, I like push-pull leg rotations because that really keeps it, you, three in a row. And then if they do a fourth day in a row, they're back to the first workout again. They're recovered by that point. Or they get rest days in between. So we're never really like hitting the same muscle group 2 days in a row. And that's fine. And if they get three workouts, say great. If they do five, cool. We rotate through, we get five. If someone's really rigid on 4 times a week, cool. I might look at an upper, lower split, right? Or push-pull leg still works really well there, right? And so it's not like I'm going out of my way to like, okay, well, fuck. Like Susie had this program and like Bill over here, they're really similar, but I can't have the same exercise. Fuck it. They're both getting the same. If it works, they're both going to do carries. They're both going to squat. They're both going to do single leg work. They're going to push. They're going to vertically, horizontally push. They're going to vertically and horizontally pull. And there may be some individualized nuance where it's like, okay, it makes more sense. You know, Susie's got dumbbells in her home gym and she's going to be working out there. So cool. She's going to be getting dumbbell rows. Whereas Bill's always in the gym. Cool. He's probably going to get like seated cable rows. Awesome. Right. Fundamentally the same fucking exercise when it really comes down, same movement pattern. So I think trainers get really caught up in, wow, I gotta have like all this like creative circus style shit. I mean, if you're interested in like having like advanced kettlebell workouts, cool. Learning those tools, great, but still understanding that, you know, at the end of the day, the person still needs to squat, lunge, hinge, press, right? The basics. Gary stuff.
Dan John said it 1,000 years ago about that.
Dan John's old fundamental stuff, right? That stuff still applies. And I think there are some really gifted people when it comes to mobility drills and all that sort of stuff. Luke is great with his media on that stuff. But we're now past the point where we think that corrective exercise has any sort of like, you know, there's no evidence. There's really no evidence to support that a lot of this corrective exercise stuff does almost anything. And you're getting the really smart physical therapists, people like Adam Meekins, who, you know, Adam just debunks all the kind of different modalities that the physical therapy world uses in their training. And Adam's whole thing is like, listen, get people moving well, get them strong, give them a stimulus. Sam Spinelli, another brilliant PhD, talks a lot about this. Give people a stimulus that is the sweet spot on the bell curve, the right amount of stimulus, so that way there is tissue adaptation, but not too much stimulus where it's going to injure them. And that's going to be different for the really deconditioned person, the person who's just starting out. The stimulus is going to be a lot lower that they need than the person who's a really advanced lifter. Once again, you get someone who's got an injured, a joint injury. Cool. We got to regress down the intensity of the load, but we still have to stimulate it, because if we don't do anything, you're just going to end up with atrophy of whatever that tissue is. So there needs to be some stimulus. It's just knowing where on the intensity scale, on that bell curve, how much of that intensity you apply. And over time, whether you're taking someone from injury rehabilitation or progressive strength, you're going to be gradually increasing the intensity, the difficulty level of that stimulus. Mm-hmm. And that's the shit that works. Okay, we want to get into mobility stuff. I think there's a lot of things that can work, getting people moving, controlling into joint end ranges of motion, loading into it. Yoga does a lot of that. It's great for it. But if you do basic movement patterns, and you load on with control into progressively more end range of motion, as long as there's not like bone on bone restriction, that over time, as you get stronger and you're able to control that, actively control through those range of motion, you're going to improve mobility, right? You warm people up effectively. We now know that the most effective way to warm people up is to do light sets of the thing we're going to eventually get into heavier stuff. I'm not saying don't do other warm-up modalities, and the older you get and the more injury stuff you have, sure, you take your warm-ups kind of seriously there. And I think that's individual to the person. And there could be a psychological aspect of it too. But fundamentally, still the best thing is probably just to get them to do the basic movement pattern, lightly loaded, warm it up, get some blood flow, make sure it's pain-free, and then you can progressively load it and then listen to the feedback set over set.
Yeah. Beautiful, man. Andrew, dude, you're the best. I appreciate you coming on, man. This time flies by with you. But as I said, I love all the work that you're doing out there. So I appreciate you coming on today, man.
Michael, I appreciate you having me. Anybody listening, guys, reach out. If you have any questions about any of the stuff we talk about, writing, you name it, media development, I will always respond. As long as my Instagram account is active, I don't think it'll go down again. And I'll say to people now, it's like, if you like this stuff, go to my website, get on my email list. Find the confirmation email. I would love to stay in touch with you guys, but if you have questions, reach out to me.
Perfect. And what's the Instagram and what's the website?
My Instagram is Andrew Coates Fitness. Recently, after my account came back up again, there were some people reporting that they weren't able to search me, or you had to type in my exact name. Today, everybody's saying I'm appearing, so I think we're good. So if you can't find me, I'll be tagged up in your stuff anyway. And then my website, www.andrewcoatesfitness.com.
Beautiful. Brother, thank you so much. Listeners, go check the show notes. Follow Andrew. I'll catch you guys on the next one. All right, peace.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found some great value here. And if you like this episode, please drop a comment and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It does more to build the show than you can imagine. And do not forget to check out and join the Strength Connection Facebook group. In this group, I share the biggest takeaways and lessons from these amazing conversations, as well as training and strength tips for pursuing mastery and fulfillment in life. This group is filled with individuals looking to take full control over their strength, and it's the perfect space to explore new ideas and to share your journey. And you'll also get exclusive access to the Strength Connection Mastery Seminars. It's a deep dive into the physical, mental, and spiritual training that you can begin using immediately. So do not wait. Go now. Seriously, go. All right. Much love to you. Thank you so much. And I'll catch you on the next one.